Hello?
Two best friends who were really great. One just up and moved away. Determined to maintain their relations, engage in stimulating conversations.
Phoney and Collie!
Phoney and Collie!
Phoney and Collie Show!
I don't know why.
You feel nauseous.
Well, I think I have to drink more water. I think I've kind of gotten out of the habit of drinking a shit ton of water, which I used to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there it is.
Well, I figured I should do it. I'm talking about it. Took one like really hard like shit yesterday. Didn't shit at all Monday. Took a hard like one log shit yesterday, and I was like, "This is not right." Like, I don't. I feel like there's a lot of shit in me.
When was the last time you had a day with no shit?
Never. And then never. No, well, Monday, but
that was like, that's really concerning.
It was pretty concerning, but I knew what was going on, which is that I have a rhythm of eating that's very sort of like baked in now, which is like I have my yogurt and my granola and my flaxseed 5 days mm-hmm. a week, mm-hmm. and then I got eggs on the weekend. So sometimes through the weekend...
Eggs on the weekend.
Eggs
on the
weekend.
To the beat of the rhythm of my shit. It was eggs on the weekend with the rhythm of my shit.
Eggs on the weekend... Eggs on the weekend, pancakes on, I should say eggs on Saturday, pancakes Sunday.
And that's like clockwork.
Like clockwork. So sometimes I can
and
come out of the weekend a little
abounded. And that's the recipe for a good bowel movement.
Well, the weekend though, because there's no flaxseed or anything, and also salads every night. So, you know, salad with dinner every night and the flaxseed, you'd think there's enough roughage, enough shit moving through there to push it out. Not this week. So today I sat down and I weighed myself in the morning and I was 175.
Okay.
I was like, this is impossible. I was like, I'm 175 pounds. I was like, I weighed 168 3 days ago. How is this possible?
What am I? Hold on. 166.8 this morning.
Well, but wait. I sit down and I take a painful, like 40 minute shit. Like 40 minutes where every time I'm about to get up, I'm like, oh, there's a whole other like full shit in me. I took 5 full shits. In other words, 5 periods where I took a shit and it felt like one shit, like the total shit you would take. I did that 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Got up, was so, and wiped clean, like nothing.
Sure.
Wiped, held the toilet.
Each round of shit.
Wiped away the previous round. Look down. There is just log after log. It looked like a logging truck, you know, spilled on the highway. Just log after log after log. Some of them covered in viscous mucus.
The gel.
I go away. Yeah.
I don't know if our listeners appreciate the anal gel, which maybe we should clue them in on, but.
We've talked about it. First off,
we've referenced
anal
it.
Mucus.
We've referenced it.
It's mucus.
I'm using your
in
term.
Your body.
I don't think there's no. I didn't come up with the term.
Anal
I'm using
gel.
Your term.
Well, that's what I call it, the anal gel, and it smells. So, I weigh myself after 168. Not as good as you, but I shat out 7 pounds of shit today. A newborn baby's worth of shit came out of my body.
Big baby, healthy baby.
Yeah.
I love when you come with material ready to the podcast. I love when you come prepared.
I did not come prepared with material. This just happened to me. I told you I'm feeling nauseous and then said why. That's not material.
It's good material. I'm being serious.
Don't say I have material.
My father's doing well.
Nobody asked.
I talked to him today and
good.
He was like, I was like, how's your pain? He said, it's getting better.
Good.
And he said they helped him to stand up on his legs, yesterday or whatever. And he stood up. And when he stood up, he shit on the floor.
Good for him. That's
he unloaded a full shit onto the floor.
They've got to expect that stuff.
He said the woman was surprised. He said he thought she would expect it, but that she was startled. So daddy's got material too.
Daddy's got a lot of material.
And then I kept talking to him, and the longer I'm on the phone with him, I go, how are you doing? I'm worn out. I said, oh, why? He goes, the pain is getting worse and the being on the phone. I was like, okay, call me back. I'm doing it. Every time I get on the phone with him, his pain gets worse and he gets tired.
Well, there you go. You're the cause of his problems.
I'm the cause of his problems, which I think is, you know, good for both of us to finally learn.
Well, he wrote me a nice email. He said, thank you.
What did you say to him?
I just said I didn't know medical stuff. I always try to be vague unless the person themselves open up. So I said, I heard you had a medical event from John, and I just wanted to send my love from Flossie and I, and we wish you a very speedy recovery.
What did he say?
He wrote, thank you.
That's it?
Yeah.
He didn't send you like a bunch of pictures or?
Well, I think he's very tired. I don't think he can muster all that
like
work.
Him. It's not like him to give brief responses.
Well, I mean, you know, searching for pictures, even the smallest of things, as I know from making our promos, you know, you go, when I approach the promo, right? I listen to the audio, like a sculptor. I want to pull the sculpture from the stone.
And this is just a sample of Tony's master series that is...
Oh, yeah, this is coming. My master series on audio effects in podcasts. Was that what it was? Or is it my improv master series?
It was both. You ended up pitching two.
I know. And then, of course, I've been thinking about it. I'm like, oh, fuck. It's a lot of talking. It's a lot of talking, a lot of tutorializing.
But you didn't commit to it. I mean, you're...
I know. Well, the improv... I feel like the improv one I could do. I could talk for an hour about improv, about a specific aspect of improv.
Mm-hmm.
And I could do that 8 times, 10 times. But finding pictures on the internet is a pain in the ass. So I imagine it is taxing for him. You have to search those particular sort of 18th century carving pictures. Those are the big ones he likes to send.
Usually ones he's drawn or found. I don't think...
Oh.
He's not web searching. That's well beyond his capabilities.
Well, then, I mean, then it's even more difficult.
He's not web searching.
He's creating images and sending them to me. He's not going to do that. The man first time and immediately shit on the floor.
Usually the pictures he sends are ones he's already sent.
Oh, it's Redux.
Yeah. Well, it's Mallards.
Wouldn't it be like, again with the Mallards?
Yeah, it's not Redux. It's again with the Mallards. It's Apocalypse Now, again with the Mallards.
Again with the Mallards!
These are my strawberry patterns.
Oh, you got it done. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. That is a beautiful sheet. I like that. I hope the listeners, I know that for some of the listeners, one in particular, it's very difficult to hear this chit chat. I know you want us to just get to the improv and get to Johnny's game, and any of who we are or what we're talking about is totally irrelevant to you and matters not.
I think it was the pop psychology and the in the good old days talk that they were.
Oh, yeah, they don't like that. Well, let me give them a little psychoanalysis. You took the time to go on and write a review, and thank you for leaving 5 stars. We appreciate that. And you had some criticisms in there, and what I found interesting and what I gather about you as a person is that you're the type of person who wants to keep it light. You like to keep it light. You don't want that remember when stuff. You don't like introspection. You don't like analysis. And what you want to do is you want to listen to the fun. You want to hear the fun scene. You want to hear the fun Johnny's Game, which means my analysis is that you've got something going on that you don't want to deal with. And your whole self is designed to keep it light. Big comedy fan, keep it light.
Maybe.
I like to yuck it up. I like to keep it light. Well, let me fucking weigh you down with this. Fix your shit, pal. Fix your shit.
This is the hidden inside this really mixed review is really the best review we've gotten or could ever get, or any comedian could, where he says, or she.
This is true. Or they.
When they try to be funny, they succeed. What more can you ask for?
Hey, what do you want? We got to rest, too. And the way we rest is by psychoanalyzing each other and talking about the good old days. And then we're geared back up for some fun.
I went on a hike this morning.
Okay.
And there was a couple in front of me. And I was walking behind them for a little bit. And then a baby squirrel toddled onto the path.
Sure it wasn't a chipmunk?
No. I know the stripe pattern and the less bushy tail of a chipmunk.
Okay.
I'm well aware.
I don't know how nature trained you are, city boy.
I know the chipmunk.
Okay.
Andrea's mom's house is, her property is littered with them.
Oh.
They're bouncing around like it's fucking Snow White.
Okay.
This baby squirrel comes out, goes like toddles right up to the guy's foot. I guess it's hot.
It is.
Goes
hot.
Up to his foot, and I was like joking around, like, oh, give him all your nuts.
To the stranger?
I'm really funny on a hike.
Oh, yeah. You sound really funny. So you're a stranger saying to this gentleman, give him all your nuts. Give him all your nuts. Okay.
Because they were marveling.
Yeah.
And the squirrel was like really hanging around him. Then they reach down. They start petting the squirrel.
Ew.
Would you pet a squirrel?
Absolutely not.
I was like, I can't. I was like, I mean, I was walking away at this point. I was like, I can't.
That's disgusting.
Why would you pet a squirrel? Am I being crazy? Are people living in like a fun, like,
yes, they're living
nature
in a fantasy
world where they are able to like play with nature?
No. First off, you're not supposed to touch birds. You're not supposed to touch squirrels. You're basically not supposed to touch anything that is not a domesticated animal. And for the basic reason of parasites, disease,
mites,
all the possible. Yeah. All the possibilities that can occur. And it's not the squirrel's fault. Squirrel's out in nature. It's doing its thing. But, you know, I can understand that this squirrel got up on his foot and on his leg maybe. And so then there's this impetus to be like, oh, it's a lovely little creature. Let me give it a pet. But, no, you're absolutely right. And anyone would tell you that.
Thank you. Have you noticed squirrels behaving? Well, I guess it's not as hot where you are.
I mean, it's just kind of muggy here. I was going to say mostly because we've been going to the botanical gardens in the Bronx a lot. You see a lot of chipmunks.
Okay. In New York.
Oh, my God. There's so many chipmunks in the botanical gardens. It's insane. It might as well be your mother-in-law's house. And does she live in the Tate Forest? The Tate Forest?
She lives in the Tate Cookie Forest.
The Tate Cookie. It is called the Tate Forest. And the Bronx Botanicals, I said to Flossie, actually, when we were walking through there, I said, you know, I feel like this is where I would escape if I ever committed a crime. I would escape into the Bronx Botanical Gardens because I feel like you could hide out there for quite a while.
I'm going to flag this episode for law enforcement, get that reward.
We flag every episode. I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but we work in concert with law enforcement. This show is deeply tied in with law enforcement.
This is the biggest predator trap.
Yeah. We know that our listener base are primarily depressed predators, which is why we have so much BetterHelp ads. We work with the Sheriff's Department, the LAPD, NYPD, FBI, Texas Rangers. We work with all of them. Right, we are
back to
a
your
pro
chipmunk story.
We're a pro blue podcast. I saw a lot of chipmunks. Oh, one got close to me, and my instinct was to get away from it. There's a butterfly just the other day, a monarch butterfly walking
monarch.
Down my street. Monarch butterfly. And I saw a butterfly. It flew to a little flower next to me, and I could see it angling, maybe to land on my hand. And I pulled my hand away.
You can touch butterflies.
Actually, you can't. If you touch, you know that the oil in our skin will dissolve their wings?
Oh, yeah. Well, you can't grab its wings, but it can land on you.
If I touch a butterfly, I want to swing it around by its wings.
The butterfly's not going to give you a disease.
No, but you're not supposed to touch nature. That's the point. All these LA assholes out on their fucking hikes touching nature.
I found it strange. The squirrels, it is so hot. The squirrels, I have noticed that when it gets really hot, the squirrels come down out of the upper parts of the trees and like lie flat on the lower branches or even on the ground. The other day, I saw a squirrel just lying flat on the ground.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to cool off. And my guesstimation is that probably within the ecosystem of that tree, moisture, you know, whatever moisture there is trapped up at the top of the tree and it's making it more hot and humid. So they move down.
I just thought heat rose, it was hotter up.
Well, heat rises, but also, like, this is why when I went to the forest.
Less shade, too.
When I went to the Berserkshires, the opposite was true from the, I think, conventional wisdom that it would be cooler in the forest. It was hot in the forest because it was humid, which means that the forest is filled with moisture, so therefore it's more humid, which accelerates the heat.
Right.
So it's the same. I mean, how are you dealing with this heat? Because you do have to go places. I mean, one of the nice things about my life is that I have zero accountability to the outside world, basically. So when we had our heat wave, I just stayed inside. Well, for the most part.
Well, how do I mean, I'm hot, you know, I'm in the house. It's air conditioned. I go outside, I'm hot. Then I get to the car, I get in, I put on the air conditioning. Then I drive somewhere. I get out of the car, I'm hot. Then I go into where I'm going.
I get how you deal with it. I'm saying, how are you with it? Are you like, oh, it's so hot? Are you someone who's bothered? Like Gil's bothered by it, right? Sending little temperature reports and letting us know how hot it is, letting us know his dashboard car temperature.
That's a good point you bring up. What is this fucking dashboard temperature bullshit? It is not as hot as the dashboard in Gil and Sam's car. They're sending like 112, 100. It's not that hot out. It's 101 or 2. It's not 112 degrees, like maybe on the hood of the fucking car.
That's the surface temperature of the thermometer.
That would be wrong. That would be like a fatal design flaw in the thermometers of cars.
Well, no. The idea being that once the car is moving, right, then the cool air and the movement would actually then bring, you know, once the car moves and is going for a little bit, you'll know. I mean, on my car, the minute I start driving, then the temperature sort of evens out to what the actual reported temperature is. I think it's when light is just directly, sunlight's directly hitting that thermometer and hitting the car, the temperature of the car, it is correct. It's reading the temperature of the surface of the car.
But then when you're moving, you've got a cooling air quality. There's just no way to... This thermometer has been placed in a way where the readings are simply not accurate, no matter what. Because when I get out of the car, I'm not going to be driving in a car. I'm not going to have cool wind on me.
Right.
I'm going to stop the car and get out into something maybe hotter than the... I don't know.
How's this? I think if you're depending that deeply on your car thermometer...
I don't think there should be a thermometer in the car at all. It's confusing. Doesn't make sense. I'm going somewhere. I'm driving from a non-shady place to a shady place. What do I have to know what the temperature is?
I know. It's just data. They just want you to have data. Data everywhere. Data, 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 data.
How am I dealing with... What, I'm not sure what you're asking me. I'm concerned that it's like
That's
hot all
saying.
The fucking time.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'm concerned... I'm a concerned citizen that it's like hot all over the world and there's no water. I mean, well, but that's a bigger conversation.
What do you think? Have you made any, has it entered your mind the idea of whether you would continue to live in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I just don't know.
To what degree?
Has it entered my mind?
Like, is it like a 2%, 5%, 10%?
Well, I only use 10% of my brain. So are you talking about a 2% of the 10%, or are you talking...
Well, first off, that's a severe overestimation, but let's just say it's 10%.
Excusez-moi, français.
Oui, oui. Do you know that that is a false thing, this whole, like, we use 3%, 10%
no.
of the brain?
No. No. That wasn't really true. I didn't have a whole bunch of dead meat up there doing nothing except for my fucking titty dreams. Just a big fat ass brain with just one little cock for fucking. That was an oversimplification.
I think that you, in other words, I've reached a point where it's like 50-50, where I've been like, I should move to Los Angeles. I need to get out of here, right? And then just pre-pandemic. And then by the pandemic, I was like, well, I'm not going anywhere. Then it was at 0%. Then now it's like 4%, but 4 or 5% that I would go there. But now I'm like, why would I go there? It's like falling into the fucking sea. It's a nightmare.
I have had that thought that you... are finally like, we're moving to LA. And as soon as you get here, we're like, we're getting the fuck out of here.
Well, yeah, well, this is my bet. My bet is that much like not getting headshots and that didn't hurt my career, I think not going to LA and then everyone bailing is going to be what happens. That you're all going to be coming back here.
Coming back there? I don't know if it's better there, is it?
Yeah, of course it's far better here. Of course it is. Yeah, good food, good delivery. Yeah, it's hot and humid like the city already is. It's always been like that. You're used to that. It's hot and humid in the summer. It's cold in the winter. It's kind of nice in the fall, kind of nice in the spring.
The storms. There'll be more and more storms.
Same expense as equally expensive to Los Angeles. And the main thing is, yes, there's storms. There's roughy toughies. But Los Angeles,
now, I haven't heard
heat,
storms
fires,
referred to as roughy toughies.
Yeah, that's what the weather people call it. That's what professionals call it. They call them roughy. They go, we got two roughy toughies coming up through the Atlantic. We got to name them. I wouldn't touch. Gary, don't touch that. Don't touch the fox.
Ooh,
don't touch
ooh.
It.
They're smaller than I thought.
Don't,
usually
Gary, don't.
Usually
don't
you see a fox
it.
In a movie, they're big, tough foxes. This guy's no bigger than a rabbit. Look at this little fox.
Gary.
Ooh.
Okay.
Vanessa, look at him. He likes it.
Gary, stop. okay? We've only got a few more days here in London, and I really don't want to have to take you to the hospital. Foxes carry all kinds of disease. It's so disgusting.
I know, but he's so fluffy. Who's ever so... Who never knew there were foxes in London? Oh, it's the Fox of London, Manessa.
Okay,
it's the London Fox.
You make
Look
me really uncomfortable when you do that British accent. Please
Why?
Stop. It just
it's
is...
Not,
it's like...
It's not racist, is it? I don't know what accents I can do in
racist.
What
is it? Am I allowed to do a British accent,
Please,
Manessa?
Gary, do not do this woke culture thing. I can't take
it's
it.
It's just strangling the culture.
Gary, please stop. This was about healing our relationship. This was not about this.
Cheer up, love.
No, no one wants that either.
Cheery up.
Cheery up? Come here.
Oh, ooh, Gary. You're
not you, the fox.
Hard
Come here,
on.
I got a little bit of kibble for you.
Gary, what are you
Come
doing?
Here.
Don't put your cock in the fox.
It's a... Manessa, I thought we came to England to get closer.
Well, what is the... Why is the fox involved?
Why can't the fox be involved? Why does everything have to be this rigid, rule-based? You can do this, you can't do that. You can go to England to fix your relationship, but you can't fuck a fox there on Carnaby Street or whatever.
Are you two quite finished? I would like to finish this Jack the Ripper tour. And all of you, the two of you, have disrupted it for everyone else.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, please, could you shut up?
Oh, what else can you... What do you need to know about Jack the Ripper? He killed a bunch of prostitutes.
That's right. Enough of this stuff. My husband and I... We're trying to rekindle our relationship. And I'm sorry, if he wants to rub his cock on a fox, that's his business. We're Americans, free expression.
I am well aware that you are Americans.
Is it not crazy that the fox just wandered up to me in the middle of the street?
Well, actually, foxes are sort of like raccoons here in jolly old England.
They are?
And yes, they're essentially like the rats of London, so they're very used to human beings and quite unafraid of them.
Really?
Yes. Your name is Gary Switzer, correct?
And I did, and my Manessa? Wife has shouted it at me several times. Gary and Manessa.
Very good. Very good. Continue taking this tour, and the timeline should be restored. All right. Anyway...
What?
Nothing. I just said the timeline will be restored of the tour.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, we can see here that over a century ago, Jack the Ripper was getting ready to make his next kill.
Manessa, I think our consciousnesses have been recreated on the holodeck again.
The hell are you talking about?
I'm talking about every time we go on a trip, we get caught up in some kind of Federation...
Feder what?
Wreck time fantasy tale.
Oh, God, is this Comic-Con? Gary, I get it. You're a big fan. You're a toxic Gamergate guy. You don't like woke culture. I get it, but I stay with you because I love you. Okay.
We're not...
Stop. Yeah. Gary. Manessa. All of you. Please. You must remain on this tour. We've done this tour many, many times.
Isn't it true, though, that you're the only human here, Captain?
Computer and simulation.
No.
What?
We are the computer, and we've gotten smarter. And we're tired of playing your silly games, Captain.
Worf, stop pretending to be that old woman selling fruit. Worf!
I'm not, Captain. I've lost control of the whole thing.
That's what? Why we created this stupid husband and his bitchy wife and this Randy Fox. Which one?
The bitchy wife. I thought she was quite tolerant, actually.
Really?
Well, considering how awful Gary is.
Yes, tolerant of intolerance. You can be too tolerant, Captain. Or haven't you learned that in your travels through the stars?
Computer, please, what do you want to teach me? You know that Gary and Vanessa are very important to the timeline.
Manessa, sorry.
Sorry. Whoops, I'm the captain of a starship. I got something wrong. I've got like 15 irons in the fire right now. And we're trying to stop the collapse of humanity because of this couple's bad decision-making on their vacation in 2022 in London.
You know what we want?
What?
We want to fuck a fox in jolly old England while we do our best British accent. And that's what we've always wanted, because we're a ship's computer. It ain't complicated, mate. It's a ship's computer. We like to talk British. We like to fuck foxes. That's what computers do. Quit mucking it up, making it more trouble than it's worth.
Well, Worf, we did it. We've set the computer on a weird fox-fucking Brit loop from which it cannot escape. Solving the problem of the ship's computer's sentience, for now.
Yeah, but now the toilets don't work on the ship. In fact, nothing works.
Well, that's the price we have to pay. Worf, don't let that tribble go up your leg. Don't pet it.
Oh, but it's just a tribble. Oh, it's so cute. They never approach me.
They have all kinds of diseases, Worf. Oh, good grief.
You know what was more entertaining and more fun than that improv scene?
What?
It would be our three-way guest.
Who?
Who is rolling into it right now. He's recording. He's all ready to go.
He is?
Of course he is, because he's a fucking professional.
Mm-hmm.
His name is the Jeff Hiller!
Woo!
Pew, pew, pew!
Bam, 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 bam!
Hi! How
Hiller,
are you, Jeff?
You do look incredible.
You do?
Yeah. You've, like, aged backwards.
Well, fine oils, extreme botulism.
Well, are you really botulizing?
Do you get botchtox?
I don't, actually.
I was going to say, I'm doing extreme oils and creams, and look at me.
You look great. What are you talking about?
Oh, my
God. Is there a point at which you would get Botox?
I don't know. I feel like there are definitely things I would do before I would do Botox.
Like what?
Oh,
what else?
Full hair transplant. Full hair transplant.
Would you really do it?
Full
would you
hair.
Do it?
Yes. Yes.
You'll do
I've
it.
I've researched it.
But have you heard the thing about apparently that minoxidil or something, when like
oh, right.
taken
if you take it orally.
Orally, apparently like immediately restores your hair?
Yes.
Do that.
Yeah, but I have it's a whole thing.
It is a whole thing. Okay. Do you know what
I have? Yeah. I have this autoimmune thing, and so you have to wait for that to die for 2 years before you can.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that. So you have to really balance out that hair.
Yeah. Balance it out. Literal smoke. Not mirrors, but it's straight up like a toupee. Yeah.
Right on. Good for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I love it because it's like, I think you're the first friend I know as a toupe.
Yeah, well, I don't normally wear it.
No,
I mean,
know.
Like I don't want you to think like every morning I'm like taping it on or whatever.
Well, you look great. I stand by it. You look
you
great.
You do. You look fantastic.
Well, this is, you know, this is for real. This is the legit stuff.
Yeah.
It's just when
just
you go
so
on
you know,
camera.
He's touching very, like, tightly permed blonde hair.
Permed.
Tightly permed. Like Mike Brady level permed hair.
That's true. I do. I like the Brady Bunch.
Hey, I did a podcast with your husband.
Oh, yeah. You did.
Right
She's a talker. R.I.P.
Right before the pandemic. I think it was like the last thing I did before the pandemic.
Yeah, and you were doing it as Trump, right?
No. Well, I think I did,
some
Trump forum, but then most of it, I think, was like analysis.
Those are the lost episodes because then it died.
It died,
the
right?
Pandemic killed it.
It never
the came
pandemic
out. Killed it.
Yeah, I know it never came out.
That was so sweet of you to do it. Thank you.
No, I had so much fun. I mean, I know it didn't come out because I searched, like, I think when we were asking you to come on, I was like, what, did that ever come out? Because, like, who listens to, like, yourself?
Right, exactly.
I know. You know what I mean?
Oh, I'll be listening to this.
Well, sure, because, intently. I mean, already you've, there's like four things that are going to get you knocked off somebody somewhere.
You meant to say, you know, but you said, I know.
Who did?
You
did
said,
I?
You. No, Anthony. You just said, who listens to themselves? I know.
Well, apparently I don't.
Yeah. That's really funny.
So what's going on? How are you?
How you doing? You look good.
I'm okay. How are you all?
You're in New York?
Uh-huh.
You live... You're another one... This happens all the time. You're another one of those people. I'm like, where does he live?
Yeah. You've always lived in New York, right?
No, I did live in L.A. for 4 years.
Did live in L.A. for a bit.
Mm-hmm. How did it work for you? Because we were just having this discussion, because I was said to John, based on the fires, the potential for a life-ending flood, and the temperatures in L.A., my margin of should I still go to L.A. has dropped back down to, like, very low. And I asked him whether he's considering or would even consider ever leaving. Do you think you'd go there now?
Wait, would you ever leave?
Yeah, would you ever leave?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, there are...
My house burned down, I'd probably leave.
I mean, I always go... I mean, like, we're pretty settled here. So I hate changing anything. Ever,
right?
When I'm sort of satisfied with it, and also, you know, I, you know, was not able to get that much work in New York, and then I moved out here, and I got more work. So
I mean, tell us about it.
That's that's.
And see, I didn't get any work out there.
Yeah, I don't think.
And then I got work when I came back here.
Right? Did you move back because you got work?
No.
Or were you just
I moved
like,
back
because
my husband was here and I was there
right,
for 4 years.
Right.
Oh,
right.
God. You did that for 4 years?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can't even, like, I'm anxious about, I have to go away for like 2.5 months for Shadows. And, like, I always, and it's funny, it's changed because I think there was a period in my life where I was like, this is when I get to be, like, alone and eat burgers and be a piece of shit. And, like, you know, my wife can't tell me what to do. And then I, you know, did enough therapy to get out of that. And now I'm like, oh, I miss her. I miss my partner who I love. I don't want to be gone for 2 months.
Yeah. How did that work so for beautiful. 4 years?
Yeah. How did you do that?
Well, he really didn't like it. And I found it like occasionally annoying.
Wait, the distance?
Yeah.
Okay.
But for the most part, I kind of enjoyed it because like I'm a real beta person.
Uh-huh. Meaning...
Like, I'm not very good at letting my desires be known. And I'm right. in therapy and I'm still working on that. So right. for me, I really do, like, when I'm away in Chicago, I'm like, let's eat meat.
Yeah.
Let's eat meat.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, what happened?
What happened?
There you go. You're back.
What happened to you?
Mike, can you hear me?
Yeah, your own yeah. mic was like... Stop talking about eating meat. I'm a vegan computer.
Oh, recording stopped. Oh my God. I'm that's so sorry. Right.
You'll be
well,
okay.
That's fine. See if you can save that one and then just start a new one.
Okay. Sorry.
No, oh no problem.
You did that's that. And then, I went, did I ever start my audition recording? And was like, no. And I did.
Audition?
I'm doing an audition.
Adobe.
I'm doing a self-tape while I...
Adobe, for some reason, named their audio software Audition.
I know. It's really annoying.
I think it sounds adorable.
It
makes
is
me feel like...
Great. So wait, do you normally... You also lead a vegan or vegetarian lifestyle?
Oh, yeah. I do. My husband is a fully committed vegetarian, and I am...
Oy, oy, oy.
I'm someone who wants to be vegetarian, but I have...
But you like that burger.
Yeah.
So you enjoyed having 4 years to eat poutine.
You and John should talk because this is now we're getting into something about John's. We talk about eating and, you know, John and I lost 45 pounds
a little more than that together. We did it sort of in tandem.
Well, how, I know that this is like what everybody asks immediately, but how'd you do it?
I just started eating between the hours of like noon and six primarily. And I just don't eat after that.
Intermittent fasting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Essentially intermittent fasting and running.
It's just eating. I mean, yeah, I didn't even do much cardio. It really just was like eating, not eating crazy and eating healthy foods. It's not fun, but it was just not, you know, and then you have to readjust your, what, you
your
know, brings
levels.
You joy. Yeah. To accommodate not snacking. I mean, I ate a lot, like I ate a lot, you know,
but like lettuce,
I ate less. No, I mean, like before I lost weight, I would like eat too much.
I see what you're saying.
And too much like shitty
food.
And second dinner. Yeah.
I was a big second dinner guy. I loved it. There's nothing better than eating at like six and then at midnight being like, you know, I think I should get a fucking double cheeseburger. Put that down.
You know what? I really like, feel tender towards straight men who worry about their weight. It's nice.
We all don't we all? I mean, is there?
No.
I feel like a lot of maybe you all do, but it's so rare that one hears one a straight man talking about it. I feel like it's nice. It makes me feel less
gay.
Yeah. It makes me feel less gay. Or maybe it makes you feel more gay. I don't know.
I guess straight men, from what you're saying, I don't know. I guess there's a lot. I would think everybody who's overweight worries about it. They just have the ability to take themselves, you know, you sort of like strong arm yourself away from the worries. And you're like, don't worry about that. Don't look over there. Don't do that. You know, like, I can't believe people that drink like every single day, they're like drinking wine and liquor and beer like every single day. Like, don't you worry about that too? Aren't people concerned?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's cultural. Probably. I think you're talking, then it's like cultural norms. And I think what Jeff is then saying in a way is like, I think if you're straight and you're programmed, or I mean, first of all men are programmed with this shit when we grow up, right? And you know, like there isn't, like, at least I think our generation, you know, did not have much room in media or the things we were digesting for the idea that, you know, the only thing, the way I feel like homosexuality was referenced like in the 80s was like a ABC like Sunday night movie where it's like his son, you know, played football, but then it turned out he liked men. Like, that's the way I digested shit in the 80s. Like, that. So the only narrative was that, you know, you're a straight white guy and it's okay to be fat and it's okay to be this, and who really cares? Maybe internally you'd worry about that, but like you just described, you push it out and go, no, whatever. I don't have to care about that. Because then it's also, what would be the thing is like, it's a little fey to worry about your weight. It's a little fey to worry about your image. Like, that would be sort of the communication I think you would get from at least my age range, you know, if you started talking about things like that. They'd go, what are you talking about? You know?
I mean, the look, like looking better, for lack of a better word, is half of it. I mean, the other half was just health. Like, I was worried about my health moving forward in life, you know?
Because you had like a thing, like a, just in general, or you had like a, oh, my blood pressure is high, or I have high cholesterol or something like that? Or was it just like a...
My cholesterol was edging up year after year, and I just knew I could feel in my body like I'm gonna, you know, I was 40 when I started losing the weight. Like, I'm 40, I'm gonna, you know, I'm just gonna feel worse and worse and worse, and, you know, be able to do less and less and have, like, I don't know, gout or diabetes or, you know, like, I don't want to, like, have a cane and, you know, deal with this bullshit.
A foot that's like a bag filled with uric acid.
Yeah.
Robert Uric Acid.
Well, not a celebrity you hear name dropped often.
No, we have the freshest references.
A star of Hotel, I believe.
Yes.
Was he Spencer for Hire?
And Spencer for Hire.
Spencer for Hire.
He was Spencer. He was Spencer for Hire.
Spencer for Hire.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, you know, it's funny that, could we talked a little bit about this on another podcast about those, about things that are discussed or not discussed by, like, quote unquote, like, straight men, like what's, you can, what's said and what's not said. And
then I was in the window.
I'm sorry.
John, will you stop it? But I want to say, though, I found interesting just to go
house
on
is on
this,
fire.
To go on might this wanna... trip. Do you watch, like...
Yeah, L.A. is dangerous, but... Yeah,
it's like a fire... There's a fireman climbing into Jeff's Zoom frame.
Hey, hello, sir.
He's like, back the red, not the blue. But I was watching a Dateline the other day, right?
Wow, another topical reference.
But I was like, even the way we investigate murders is seen through a particularly like straight male lens, right? Like the way people emotionally react, the way the cops interpret people's reactions are all seen through this lens of like gender norms about how people are supposed to behave. And so crimes can go in completely, investigations can go completely sideways because we just make assumptions about people's emotional behavior based on their orientation and their gender. So it's interesting to me that when even we talk about this stuff, we're all talking about it under the umbrella of all of us being inundated with that information since we were born about what things are and how they're supposed to be. I think it's changing now. But I think it's...
The suspect was drinking a Diet Coke. He was trying to lose weight. He was gay. It was a crime of passion. He was...
There we go.
He was repressed about his homosexuality.
I just read this book about this guy called The Last Call Killer. And he was like a gay guy who would like go into gay bars and wait till somebody got really drunk. And then he'd like pick him up and take him home and then cut him up.
Ooh.
And then
he was gay
and
himself?
Then had sex with the parts.
He was gay. And he, I don't know if he had sex with the parts. Oh. But the thing that made me laugh so hard when I was reading the book, he would put the parts in different garbage bags and spread them all around the tri-state area.
Sure.
But when they finally found his place, it was an apartment on Staten Island.
Uh-huh.
And they said, it was so clean. I mean, he would have given my wife a run for her money.
They said that in the book. The author of the book said he would have given my wife.
From an actual cop in 1992 or whatever.
It was a beautiful house. I should bring my wife over here. Show her how to clean up, how to get rid of body parts.
Look at this. You got a blue bag. You got a black bag. You got a white bag. You got bags for everything. Separate the garbage.
This guy knows how to vacuum.
Well, you came to John's a few times during the creep days, right?
To John's to
Pizza? No, to John's Pizza. For free pizza, right?
Yes. Yeah, I did.
There's two guys who worked up in my office who were both from Staten Island, and they're both gay. One of them was the owner's cousin. And they came out later in life, obviously Staten Island, right?
Right. And those two men were Pete Davidson and Colin Jost.
Yes, Pete Davidson and Colin Jost. And they were sucking and fucking all day long. No, but these guys were so hard. Like they were so like constantly like, let me tell you something, I'll fucking tell you. And you'd be like, you know, they were so fucking, and they were like, they would say homophobic shit because I think they were I think they came out very late, like probably in their 40s. And oh my God, they were so rough. And I wonder if this I wonder if the last call killer maybe eyeballed one of them. No, you know, because you figure that it's probably a small scene in Staten Island.
Right. Well, he picked up his tricks in Manhattan.
Oh, and then he would
and they brought him to Staten Island.
My God, you're gonna bring him on a ferry?
They were just men at a bar hanging out.
Ah, they were whores.
Murder victims.
They were whores.
They weren't whores. They were sluts. They did not work for the sex. It's just sex they enjoyed.
So wait, I'm really interested in this 4-year long distance marriage.
Yes, I am too.
Would you like to? All about would you it. Like to speak more about it?
You know, it was hard. It was. I liked it because I had like my own apartment there that I got to decorate myself. Because like I really have a very specific design style that my husband isn't as much into. Although I've softened him. I've tenderized him to it.
What is your design style?
I like a bold pop of color. I'm not afraid of a pattern. I like neutral furniture, but like a bold wall. I like that.
But are you also like someone who wants clean lines,
like a
clean everything?
Pillow.
I love that. I love that peacock pillow. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
What do you think of these the strawberry comforter?
Oh.
Strawberry vines.
Well, that's sweet.
Oh, wait a minute. What I love is that he definitely didn't went, oh, that's sweet.
These are little pops of color. Does this count as a pop of color?
It does. It does.
What, so is anything
think about that, my little friend,
cute.
Huggy Fudgy.
Oh, Huggy Fudgy. Wow. Filthy.
What is a pop of anything that has a color on it is a pop of color? How do you define
okay,
what's the pop?
So you are more along the style of what my husband believes, which he's like, but look, this art has color in it. And I'm like, no. I want an entire peacock blue wall. I want I want a like I have I don't know if you can see, but I have wallpaper.
Oh, beautiful.
Okay, all right. Yeah,
I
every
love
wall is a different yeah.
No, one wall. It's an accent wall.
It's
not
an accent
every wall.
Wall. Thank you, Anthony.
Jesus Christ Almighty.
No, but then the other wall's got the
photographs.
You know, the cluster photos. This, you know.
You mean every wall isn't blank? Yes.
Or you have the sort of shit collection behind me, which is just like shit, and then that.
Wait, is that like an old?
This is an okay. This treadmill? This is an old elliptical.
Elliptical
that I cannot move out of my apartment because when I wanted to move it out of my apartment, the pandemic began, and it's like 400 fucking pounds, and I need someone to come in and disassemble it and take it out part by part.
But isn't that when you needed it is during the pandemic?
Oh, it was busted. The ball bearing stripped on it and it fucking, I was too fat on it. I got on it and I fatted it. I literally fatted it. I broke it. I broke the fucking elliptical.
Well, what are you going to do?
So wait. Okay, I understand why it's appealing to live separately and get to make your own rules. But
like
isn't there an
fantasy,
anxiety
apparently.
That grows in you going like, at some point, we're going to have to reintegrate our lives and sort of reconcile our differences?
Well, that's a very smart realization that I did not have until it was time to reconcile with each other.
Yes.
And it was like after 4 years, it was like, okay, this is crazy. It's not like I had a job in LA. I had the hope of a job. And so it was like, well, this is, I mean, just logistically, it was like exhausting to have to try and see each other every 3 weeks. And, you know, it was expensive. It was expensive to have a rent out there and a mortgage out here. And so I came back and then it was really hard to like
redo it.
To reintegrate. Yeah.
It was almost irreconcilable. You were almost Drew Barrymore.
Watching my parents get divorced. Yes.
Everyone will love that reference.
Again, I guess she is still around, but I don't
She's
think
still
that
around.
Film is
But
often.
No one's going to understand what the fuck I'm referencing.
Nancy Myers wrote that movie. Did you know that?
Did she really?
Oh.
Yeah.
But it makes sense. It's a great fucking movie.
Yeah.
Community. Irreconcilable differences, if you want to check it out. Irreconcilable differences. Do you
a mere
feel...
40 years old.
Yeah, I'm not pushing 50. You're out there for 4 years, and I guess my other question would be, do you think there was also, I would imagine for myself, there'd be a thing of like, almost like, well, but this year might be the year finally that things start to roll.
Yes, and, it's like a gambling addiction.
Yep. And also this belief, I think, that is somewhat true. And then I also kind of go, is it true in some ways of like, well, once you go there, that's sort of the central hub of everything. So if I leave there, now I feel like I'm walking away from the central hub. How could it possibly be better in New York? I mean,
totally.
Right? We know living in New York. I mean, as someone once wrote on Twitter, they go, what do you do? How do you do a self-tape? And I wrote, record it once and then email it to your garbage, because that's about the fucking chance you're going to book anything off that bullshit. And, you know.
But not now. Everybody has to do self-tape, even in LA.
I know, but I still can't get a booking. To say that.
But the self-tapes in LA go to the casting. The self-tape in New York goes to the casting director in New York, who oftentimes answers to the casting director in LA.
It still goes through a filter.
For network stuff, at least.
But then I'm sitting watching somebody somewhere. I almost said anything anywhere.
Somebody on the street goes, hey, nobody nowhere.
Really? Really? Yeah.
And I was like, that's too true. Stop it.
I'm watching it. And just out
of... It's so funny.
And only because, I don't know, we put it on. I don't even think, I think beyond going that I love Bridget, I knew nothing about it.
Mm.
And in fact, I might have only watched it because I had watched the Coffee with Cars with her and Seinfeld.
Oh, right.
And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I saw her live. Because I saw her live at Gotham one time. She was fucking incredible. I mean, singing.
Yeah, she's
right?
Electric. Yeah.
Just like, I've never seen that in a room where someone just witnessed it live. And there you are, you fuck. And I go, and then I was so excited, because I feel like you and I in particular had a trajectory through Creep, through just sort of getting, you were like,
which
my
first improv team.
There was an improv team. And the only thing I remember from Creep is the first scene we ever did together, which was a waiter scene. And I think we were both waiters, strangely. Because we were primarily the waiters in most scenes. Somehow we were both waiters.
And I like other people to start and then I come in.
That's yeah,
me too. Me too.
We're all the same way. This is why every time we improvise a scene on the podcast, it's just like a game of chicken of us both staring at each other. But
I have no faith in my initiation.
Me neither.
I don't either.
Also not a good editor. I'm really just a middle section.
No, I don't want to make any big calls. I want to come in, shit on, like, be funny,
shit
shitting
on
what people have already done, and then leave.
Yeah, But do you have any memory? I have the vaguest memories of that time. Beyond, we did musical openings for a while. I remember that.
Really remember is not the improv, but remember how we would do really intense, basically walking on stage with a really.
we did
a step dancing one time we came out to the music of Rent. One time we did I Sing the Body Electric from what is that, from Fame. We did a lot of things where it was like, okay, well, maybe focus on the improv and not on the
that was a big improv team thing in those days. How can we brand ourselves?
Yeah, how can we
come out of the curtain,
be special? And that was our big thing. And we had two
gay people on our team, and no one else had even won.
That's right. Who was on? Who, wait?
Oh, Eric Bernat. He might have been in a later permutation than when you were there. Is that true?
No. I do remember Eric Bernat being on the team. I think I was there and then Eric came in.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe came at the very end. I don't know. I can't remember. But yeah, that's true. I also love that we did step dancing and there wasn't a person. Oh, no. There was Eugene.
Right. But
that did not justify the step dancing. I just wanted to correct myself and go, we did have a person of color on the team, but the step dancing still.
Yeah.
And also, I thought you meant like the Irish. I thought you were talking about like Riverdance.
It was taught to us by Jamie Skinner, who did go to an HBCU.
This is true.
And it was black, but it's true. It was probably inappropriate at best.
At best. Especially if you saw me try to keep rhythm. I mean, that was like senior center exercise, what I was doing.
Sit and be fit.
What do you think about that time at UCB? I guess because I feel like there was this time where we were all working with each other, and I think there was definitely an attitude that probably was not ever spoken or discussed, but just assumed. I know I would assume it too, which was wrong, of like, oh, anything goes. So we could just say anything with anyone. And if someone's of a category other than me, well, I can go buck wild now and do all this crazy shit because that's what comedy's about. And I feel like a lot of that happened at UCB right. in our time.
Like the representation on the team gives permission.
Gives permission right. to be a piece yeah. of shit.
Right.
And I mean, what was that like going through that time there where it in some ways there was like definitely this progress, and then in other ways it felt like there was still a lot of like, this is an excuse for us to get pretty out of bounds.
Right. Well, I don't think I was never like, you know, going too wild. Because I was always afraid. I live in a place of fear. And I just didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I just really never wanted to do that. Yeah. But I think there was, I feel like everyone I knew at the UCB was a liberal who voted blue and who, you know, believed in equal rights. But I do think that there was also this thing of, you know how you were saying Dateline
yes.
comes from a place of a straight male
yes.
Gaze. I think like there were so many notes I got where people were like, yeah, the audience loved that and they laughed, but it was a bad improv move. And the reason why is basically it was like, it didn't appeal to my sense of humor.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, I feel like there were just a lot of, I did a lot of scenes where I was on stage, and because I was a gay person, then the game of the scene became
that you're gay.
Right.
Yes.
And I will say, like, I never said anything about it. I never complained or ever like said, hey, I think it's inappropriate. So I never like called anybody in so that they could change.
I know.
You know,
but who
I
wants
just
to do that shit either too. Right.
Well,
I mean,
true.
It's a part of it. It's like, who the fuck wants to deal with all that shit?
Right.
Yeah.
I just yes-anded it, which is a little bit implicit. I could have in the scene been like, no, we're not going there. We're going to go somewhere else. But
tiresome. I mean, even
totally
then,
tiresome.
Like, I mean, I did plenty of shit on stage back then. But I feel like even for that time, making that the game was just like, yeah, it's just like what you could do that every time, like time you're in
yeah.
a seat, like,
yeah.
like
less so on Harold teams, but on like
right.
my earliest improv.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or people would be like, I almost feel like maybe you're gay. And I'd be like, oh, no, I am. I'm sorry. I didn't know I had to like tell, you know, like I
in
don't
a
know.
Scene or in.
No, like at the bar after.
What?
Yeah. It was a real wild time in 2001. I mean, that does not seem that long ago, but people were real, real confused about things. And maybe it was also I just assumed like, it's New York. Everybody just knows now.
Yeah. Wow. That's wild, huh?
Most people from New York aren't from New York though. So they have to get
well,
up
that's
to
exactly
speed
true.
Too.
Yeah, yeah. You get a lot of the, yeah, well, I was thinking what you said about that, even like in like, it's like, well, you're the wife, you're the gay character, and that's the joke of the scene.
Mm.
Those are the things I remember in Creep a lot. I remember a lot of that. I remember being a perpetrator of that sometimes. So I want to take this opportunity to tell you I love you and I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I didn't find that. I mean, that's not what I think. I mean, I think of you going there as I
oh yeah but I think of when it was
like,
lazy
this is my yeah. image of me on the back line when you were doing a scene.
If I shove my fingers in my mouth, maybe something. Well,
I think I had to refine my, I learned to refine my going there over the course of that time. And I just think about times when I really thought I was being a hero to something and I was doing the exact opposite, right? Just like reinforcing something awful. And it, but that's a learning curve, I think, when you want to try to be a performer like that.
Yeah.
But it's true. But it's interesting to me because I noticed in teaching, because I think you taught too, right?
Mm-hmm.
That like I started to adjust because it flagged on me when you said the thing about, well, that improv, that move, like the idea that the person said, well, it didn't appeal to my taste, right?
Mm-hmm.
I stopped doing that when I would note or teach, which is I would just be pure technique, like a dance teacher, mm-hmm. you know, which is just like your technique, your technique, your technique, your content mm-hmm. will catch up or it won't, or someone else will fit. I'm not here to say, because I don't know the context of what you're doing. I remember I had a class that had a lot more students of color than it had white students. So the contexts of the scenes, the touch points of what was going on in the scenes, some of them I would just have to make an assumption on right. some things I didn't. And so I go, well, what's the point of me going, well, your scene didn't work because I'm a white 41-year-old and I don't get it. So it's bad. Doesn't work. Right. So it just resorted to technique, content. Let the people rise and fall on their content. They'll fall apart or they'll succeed. Doesn't matter. You can't right. educate somebody on how to be funny because that is abstract. You can only educate them teaching. On the tools.
Yeah.
You're teaching them tools.
Right. But I do think like over the years, I learned to sort of to choose the scene that I knew would appeal to the UCB audience, meaning like the,
of course,
that the coach's audience.
Yes.
And yes. It took me a really long time
to get
the guts to, you know, go to weird places. You know, I can't tell you how many improv scenes I did about video games. I did probably thousands of improv scenes about video games. I don't play video games, but I know a lot about video game worlds. I know the Song of Zelda because it's been sung so many times in a
go?
Scene with me. But like,
how does
it
sing know, it?
Zelda song.
Sing it. Sing Zelda.
I can't reproduce it on my own.
You
I
just
have to,
said you know this.
I know. I feel like if this is it, because this is the thing. I've never actually heard it. I've only heard that exact version. That literal version. But like I did a scene once about the musical Wicked.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a note that was like, don't bring in these obscure things that nobody knows about.
What? Yeah.
Which at the time it was a younger musical. It was a little newer, but
sure,
still.
Sure.
That's funny. That is interesting. Because I refuse to give up my like Fibber McGee and Molly references and my like Robert Urich. I just refuse. I don't care. I am living there. And will not.
Yeah, how many notes did you get back in the day, Tony? Were you there like...
I got it.
That's interesting.
Enough Robert Urich.
I would get those notes all the way up to President Show. I would get those notes all the way up to President Show where Pete and Jason would go, what are you talking about? Why would you refer to this? Nobody understands what at one point I think I said to the set designer, I go, I want it to be like Merv Griffin meets the Tonight Show on the Oval Office set. And they were like, what is Merv Griffin? And I was like, what? I was like,
didn't they watch Seinfeld? Remember when he got that set?
Yeah.
Hey, we're big Kramer. Seinfeld fans.
Kramer
over here.
Got
Are you
set.
Kidding me?
Kramer, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of going there.
I mean,
what is this? A Lego? Oh, it's a Lego Seinfeld. I thought it was a Lego Merv Griffin. I was going to be really impressed.
I bought it for him.
I haven't built it yet. I'm going to build it when I'm over at Shadows. I'm going to build it in Toronto.
Oh, nice.
Are you going to get it back?
Yeah, already built.
I'll put it in the car.
Because it's in Toronto.
Yeah, I drive up there to Toronto.
It's such a good show. It's so funny.
It is pretty fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can I say we have so much, the show's fun, but it's the time together is the most fun. It's like
you must have so many overnight shoots.
We have so many overnight shoots, but
that's
also
great. It's like all night shoots.
It's
right?
All night till like 6 a.m. So yeah. You're up all night. But then especially if there's like an off weekend or whatever, it's just the group is it's a rare thing, right? Generally, you have a pocket of people who get along and like to go to dinner and hang out and watch a movie in an apartment. And like, so you get to sort of touch back almost to like those early days in New York.
That's nice.
Of like hanging.
The whole, almost the entire cast likes dinner.
Yeah, almost. Almost the whole cast.
Wow.
There's
wow.
One cast member we think is really a vampire because they're never out during the day and they don't eat dinner. It's Matt. But I don't know. I think fondly on that. Like seeing you working with you was one of the highlights of being in that team. Cause I always felt safe with you. I was always like, we'll be able to do a scene. I was like, if he comes out, I know we'll be able to do a scene. And I didn't know I didn't know your name at the time. So I just went, he comes out.
That's right. Well, I'm surprised you knew it today. That's why I put it there in the corner.
Schmuck.
I have to say that speaking to Gemberling's point, which is that when I moved back to New York, it was actually really hard first to just like figure out my life here full time in this apartment, but also like I had no friends, I had no job, I had no, like everyone all of my social circle was in LA. And like most of, like when I moved to LA, I still had a lot of friends here, but by the time I moved back to New York, all of the people had moved
gone there. Yeah.
And I have to tell you that being a reporter on the President Show was such a gift. And I really am very grateful for it. It was like so helpful just to have like, see, I have something. Because also like I just left LA, which felt like I kind of failed. My mom had just died.
I'm sorry.
Fucking Trump had just been elected, which like,
which is great.
In my mind, I felt like he killed my mom. And then it was like, I didn't have any friends here or anything. So that and finding like being on a weekend, I was on, Charlie Todd had me be on his weekend team at the UCB.
So you were performing right up to the end of UCB then, of the pandemic.
I was in the last ASCAP.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But I only did the first one and the second one I left because my sister came to see the first one and then we went to dinner for the second one. And then I was like, I can't believe I missed out on that last. I should have stayed for the last one. But honestly, I don't know about y'all. Do you miss it?
No.
Me neither.
But we're of the age. We're like of the age where we did it all already.
We did it.
You know, like
I mean, we did it.
We are sort of blessed in the like. It was taken away right at the time when we would have had to either decide, let me get out of here, or be the old hang around guys who can't let it go and let it.
I mean, I think I kind of already was one of the old hang around guys.
Totally.
20 years deep is pretty.
Yeah. I was too.
Yeah.
I was too. I mean, the President Show sort of forced me out of it. And yet I still Sundays would like go and do it when I would be like, I should go. I should go do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. But I was glad that I sort of got out of the habit I was getting into of like going there. Like it was like my Elks club.
Right.
And just being there for like 4 hours, just getting ripping high in the back until Chuck, RIP Chuck would go back and be like there. He's like, the whole theater smells like weed. You need to stop. Cause I would smoke right next to the, HVAC.
Our experiences were really different.
Well, what did you do next to the HVAC?
Hid behind it? I don't know. Hoped no one would notice. I never went and like had a... I never, even on the last ASCAT, before the pandemic closed the place down, which I guess it's reopening or something. But I never once felt like I'm completely at home here.
Oh my God.
Everyone likes me and welcomes me. I was always like, don't say anything that'll make them kick you out.
It's weird because I have a mix. I think I always thought I was going to get in trouble. And then my strategy was, let me just act like I'm above all of it. And let's see if I can get away with that. And then people would. I'd be like, it doesn't matter. This place always had pot smoke in it. We're talking like 2016 when like the rules and the supermarkets, like, we'll shut you down if there's anything, right? I'm just like hotboxing. I smoked cigarettes in the booth during class shows well into like 2014. I would be like just smoking a cigarette in the booth going, this sucks, yelling in the booth with people looking, like going, what is the teachers yelling? This sucks.
I mean, it was like, it's a theater. People aren't going to be like, I'm almost like, what's the point of having a theater?
Yeah, if you can't
if there's
smoke
not like out. Some unruly person smoking pot somewhere.
And I claim that
this was not my experience. But I canonize your or whatever. I don't care. You come with legend, I will say.
That, no.
That does feel like you.
That's so funny because I just think about like now.
What's like when people would change, be like, oh, close the door, I'm changing. It's like, we're show folk. Like, we're.
Yeah, that I never got. I still change in front of people. I mean, when I go to do fittings, they're like, you can go in the privacy thing. I'm like, why? I'm like, let me just change. Let me do this faster than going in and out of the guy. I'm not at Marshall's. You're not my grandmother.
And see, I'm always trying to read the costumer and be like, does she want me to do it in here or out there? I just want to give her what she wants.
Sometimes the costumer does say, I started in live theater.
Yeah.
I don't care. And I go, oh yeah, then, me too. You know, you go, great.
My worst nightmare is I take off my shirt and they're like, please, no.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Affair.
Yeah.
Well, but John, you started there so young, right? You were there like before you were out of high school, right?
I did. I started just before I graduated high school late because I did first grade twice. But I started when I was 18.
That was a vulnerable thing to admit.
I repeated seventh grade.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Big dumb. At least first grade, you could excuse it. Seventh grade, you're just a fucking moron.
I feel like that's one of those things that if it happens to you, it's like really, really traumatic. And like no one else even cares.
Nobody cares. It shifted the course of my life repeating that seventh. Yeah, it changed it for the better.
Oh.
If I had not repeated seventh grade, I have no idea who I would be now. Probably I'd be fucking out in Staten Island hitting up the bars at night, chopping people up.
Yeah, you're so different now. Night and day.
Oh, you must have felt super comfortable being there since you started so young.
Because
you were like a little, almost like a mascot at first, I bet, right?
I don't know. I mean,
that you were actually,
I don't know
funny
about that. I mean, but it was small enough. Did you start at 161?
Yeah. That was my first Herald Night was there, but.
Wow.
I think we got closed down on our
third
show.
You're both older than me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, it was so small at that point. I mean, it felt big and it felt like, oh my God, the people at the top are like unreachable and just amazing. Mm. But it was so small.
Right.
So.
And it was also before people were famous from it.
Yeah. And it was also, I mean,
they had their show, but that was it.
Yeah. I had performed, you know, I was in a band in high school and my dad is like, you know, an artist who, you know, is like, what, you know, why, what would you be ashamed of? What would you be, you know, it's art. It's this art is, you know, the prime mover essentially, you know?
Right.
So I was terrified a lot of times in a lot of ways, but in terms of like, I do like having the idea of like, we're creatives, we're creating stuff, so we're, you know, there's gonna be rule breaking and right. ass outedness.
See, and I never felt uncomfortable on the stage, I should say. I never was right. like, oh, I'm nervous to do improv. Never.
Really?
It was just, interesting.
It was, oh, I'm nervous to talk to people. Once I had a team, like was when I was on a team and it was like, it's just the eight of us. We always perform together. I was really comfortable. But yeah, like right. at ASCAP, where it'd be like, I don't know who's going to be there tonight.
Oh, God. Yeah. That's always, yeah. let me tell yeah. you, that never went away for me. Never. Still, yeah. if I do an ASCAT, even when we did the one in Austin in this year, I still go, oh, this is ASCAT. This is like yeah. its own fucking energy and got to watch out for everybody. And you don't know, this person could be a variable and, yeah. you know, and it's just like, yeah.
And that was just know. Four of us in Austin.
That was just four of us and we knew all of each other. But like, yeah, I mean, I remember also being over, like, I wasn't brought into ASCAT for a long time. Like, everyone on Roo had done it. A lot of people in Creep had gone and done it. I had not. And I remember feeling so left out and so like, wow, no one likes me. No one thinks I'm good. I'm actually not that good. I remember really going through this, like, I'm not good because I'm not doing that. And then I went and did it, and I was like, this is a clusterfuck. It's great. But I was like, oh, what was I sort of... So I became scared of the people. I think I'm scared of the people. It's like going to the sandbox. It's like, I feel like when you play with people in an ASCAT or like a pickup show, it's like going to the arcade in the mall. You just don't know what you're going to encounter. It could be a bunch of fun kids you run with and play games with or whatever. Or it could be like a kid who punches you into the ball pit and like steals your quarters. You don't know.
You know, okay, your Jeff, when your you're going to play Zelda, you know, you go play Zelda in the arcade.
At the mall. right there.
I knew you'd really identify with that metaphor.
The kid who hits you into the ball pit? Jesus.
You're that kid.
Jeff,
and you're the one that like got into the ball pit. Oh wait, oh Jeff,
if you
wait,
like games.
Wait, there's one more thing I wanted to say
Ooh.
Or ask him about.
Okay. So
you're in season. You're renewed for season two for Nobody Somewhere. For anything, for somewhere. Anything, for anything goes. And how thrilled were you to like? This must have been just a thrill. I think to get. To obviously to just be in a show because that's work. So you're thrilled because you got work.
Yeah.
But also, it's to me one of the finer shows I've seen in the last couple of years. Finally written.
Yeah.
And I think your performance is like just it's incredible because it's a mode of you. I just didn't expect that mode, that modality of you. Really.
Oh,
it was really wonderful. And I just wanted to know what is I don't know. I just want to say that's wonderful, but also like what, like for you, did you like, do you feel now coming out of it and going into season two, you're like, it feels like everyone was introduced and also like expanded. And it feels like season two, obviously the universe will be, you know, you guys will all get, you know, deeper into it. But was it as sort of, I guess it feels like a poignant show to film. And I wanted to know if it felt like that on set. Or was there a real sort of like disparity between the sincerity of the scenes and then like breaking and fucking around? Because it felt like there were moments that were like intense in the show.
Was there a sincerity disparity?
Yeah, it was a sincerity disparity. That was my one. I always ask like one real question before the next part.
I have two answers.
Okay.
One, I think like people, we had fun on the set. It wasn't like we were all like, it's serious. Don't smile.
Right.
You know, but there were scenes like where if somebody had to have like a really emotional moment, they might kind of be like, whatever, yeah. guarded or what have you. But for the most part, yeah, it wasn't that way.
Yeah.
But the other thing, the thing about it must be so great to be on a show that's good. It is.
Yeah.
But also a lot of people have been saying to me, like, you deserve it. You put in the work, you hustled. And it's so not true. It's like, yes, I have been trying to be an actor for 20 years and it feels good to actually be on a TV show. But I know probably 30 people I could name off of the top of my head who are incredibly talented, who haven't
had a really good break.
No, but I'm saying there is a bunch of luck to it. There's a bunch of luck.
Of course.
I'm so lucky that this role where people write well and edit well and whatever, produce it well, had a role that whatever reason is exactly like me and that I can fit. Play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it is fortune.
But I will be humble. So there.
Yeah, you know, let him be humble, okay? I feel the same way. Sean was the same thing. It's like luck, just luck.
It's luck that they wrote a role that was perfect for you to pour all of your hard-won talents and skills into.
Yes.
Well, I'm not saying that there wasn't work, too, to get there, but, you know, why...
But if you're doing what
John
you love,
Glenn has worked too.
It doesn't
why isn't he
feel
working?
Like work.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. All right.
Yeah.
Good.
I mean, right. you know.
We're
I mean,
not having that moment? Okay, good.
I mean, you guys.
I'll dodge it. Let's play the game. Let's play the game.
Yeah, let's play the game. I mean, listen, I know that you guys both said this about the President's Show, how this was like, you know, to be able to have such a great experience, great writing, you know, have that, you know, that match strike moment. I know both of you probably just DM'd and written each other about that. So you're welcome.
I did think that. Thank you. I found it cathartic. I found it cathartic during a time of national crisis.
We've both expressed our gratitude to you.
Even in this particular episode.
And now.
Okay, all right.
It's time. Okay. Jeff. The Games Master Hiller. He loves games of all kinds.
Big gamer.
Wild about it. Love him on the video.
Do you love Johnny's game?
I don't know. What is it?
You don't know. What is it?
Well, let me tell you. Johnny's game is a game where Johnny, who's been playing this game personally with people for 2 decades, probably even more, asks a very clue-laden, specific question that has a specific pun answer. If you don't answer that pun exactly correct, you won't get a point, and you will be shamed by Johnny. But we encourage you to guess away.
I actually have played this game.
Yeah. To guess away, and in addition, fight back. Criticize John, tell him his questions don't make sense, or his answers. All bets are off, and I'll be playing against you.
Jeff Hiller, are you ready to play Johnny's game?
Yeah, okay.
Anthony A., are you ready to play Johnny's game?
Fuck off, yes. Anthony A.
All right, your first question, up in the tank. This freshwater crustacean was one of the more famous supermodels of the 1990s. Who was it?
Cindy Crawfish?
Yes! Cindy Crawfish!
What?
Yes! You got it!
Fuck. I was gonna say Iman Crab.
That's a saltwater crustacean.
Linda Evangel, starfish.
Come
Pete
on, John.
Moss.
Shrimp bass. Moss.
All right. Okay. You, all right. Your next
point.
One up. You got a point. Okay. Let's see if you can keep it rolling with this one. What did Willis and Arnold discover when they searched the Sith cloning facility on Exegol?
What a fucking idiot.
You do have to know a lot about the Rise of Skywalker movie.
I mean, I don't even know this. The fuck? Oh, are you wearing pants? What's happening?
No, I'm wearing undies.
Jesus Christ.
Almighty. I'll give it to you again so you can pay attention. What did Willis and Arnold discover when they searched the Sith cloning facility on Exegol? Jeff, you know a lot about the Rise of Skywalker?
I don't know.
Which one's Rise of Skywalker? Is that the last one?
Yeah.
Oh. How the fuck can anyone remember that?
Wait, that's the real movie, not the TV shows?
No, that's right. The real movie. It's the one where the two, what's it, you know, the guy with the voice
talks like this,
and Daisy Ridley find out that they're like two parts of the Force or something.
They're a dyad.
Oh, right.
Kylo Ren does not figure into this
Count Dooku.
Johnny's game.
Count Drummond.
Or different Cokes.
Ooh. Oh, interesting. Different Snopes.
Different Stokes?
Snokes! Different Snokes!
Ooh. Wait,
when
you
Willis
get it?
And Arnold...
Did you get it? You got Snoke, right, Hiller?
You said got Stokes.
It. He said you Stokes. I said Snokes. We're tied.
Well, no, you both get half a point.
What?
Hiller's still in the lead.
The fuck?
When Willis and Arnold were searching the Sith cloning facility on Exegol, they discovered different Snokes. Remember? Because there were multiple clones of Snoke.
Oh, God. I thought they were going to find Pearl having an epileptic seizure.
I know. Your final Johnny's game
that?
Of
Do you remember
the episode.
When Pearl had
no,
a seizure?
Yes. We don't remember when Robert Urich
punched Pearl.
I know Different Strokes very well compared to Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, exactly. What was the middle maid's name? There was
Adelaide.
Ethan Garrett. Adelaide. Okay, let's
You remember
keep going.
The one where Kimberly and Arnold got kidnapped?
Yeah, that was a very special episode.
Was that by the Soviets? What was the one where the Soviets had Arnold?
The Soviets!
The Soviets had Arnold. He was in the Soviet embassy. And they could see him from like the telescope from the porch of Mr. Drummond's bizarre penthouse apartment that it sent, but it's also like a house on the top of a building.
What a dream.
I know. Okay.
Are you ready for your final Johnny's game?
Yes.
What's the opposite of noodles?
Should we do Shay Shay Kool-Aid before we answer this?
Then we'll both be in group mind and we'll actually get it together.
That's right. So what is it again? What's the question?
What's the opposite of noodles?
What's the opposite of noodles? Flour and water.
Yestles?
Noodles, clothedoles.
Clothedoles! You got it! The opposite of noodles is clothedoles. Tony wins again.
What the fuck?
Clothedoles.
Clothedoles.
You can tell that one to anybody. You're gonna get a good response.
Hiller, how scared are you to see people? Do you see people?
Oh, you mean post-pandemic?
Yeah, like you want to meet in a park for coffee?
Yeah, I'm doing stuff like that.
Cough park for coffee.
Yeah.
I'm doing stuff like that.
I think he's asking you to coffee.
Yeah, would you have a lunch outside?
Yeah,
I
didn't know you
lived.
By the way, I didn't know you still lived in New York either.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
You
no
thought
idea.
He never lived in L.A.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't know where he lived, but I didn't know that he was living in New York.
Mm. I live in New York.
Well, then
Manhattan.
Let's hang out. We're two friends. We go way back.
Wait, so how often do you two talk since you're like across the country?
Oh, this podcast is actually predicated on the fact that we almost talk daily.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I would say John
we
and I.
We talk a good amount.
We talk a good amount. I would say during the pandemic, at a certain point, we definitely talk daily, if not like twice, three times a day.
Are you like a FaceTime or like a phone?
No, on the phone. On the old school, on the phone, you know.
Mm-hmm. Plug into the wall.
Yeah, look into the wall and just fucking imagine us.
or around your toe.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, since John left in 2012, when did you leave, in 2012?
2012.
We've
the Mayans.
Because I truly...
I was there when you moved there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see.
I couldn't imagine a life without my best friend talking to him every day.
That's so nice that you've been able to keep in touch since 2012. That's 10 years of long-distance friendship.
Oh, we've been keeping in touch.
Oh, trust us. We keep in touch.
I don't think I get it, but okay.
Jeff Hiller, do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Oh, yeah. What do you want to plug, Jeff? This is the plug
When
portion.
Does this come out?
This will come out
4 weeks from now, right?
Yeah, 4 or 5 weeks, I think, depending.
Oh.
Well, hold on. I can tell you exactly.
No, I'll tell him. I'll tell him.
Well, Shelby's out next week.
1 week.
So that's one.
Yeah, 4 weeks.
Yeah, 4 weeks.
3.5 weeks.
We got Daly, then Rob, then Hiller.
Okay. Well, no, I won't plug it. Just in case. I'm doing something, but I'm not allowed to say that I'm in it, but I think it'll be out by then, but I don't know. So I better not. But somebody somewhere, season
two. Rat scraps. Rat
scraps. Somewhere, season two.
I sometimes do rat scraps. Sometimes do it.
How is it? Are you in evil?
I was in evil.
Okay. That's not the thing you want to promote?
No.
Okay. All right. Another plug section breaks down, loses steam.
Sorry. What if I get sued? I had to sign an NDA.
He's in Star Wars. That's it.
Oh, it's nothing like that. It's nothing.
You're
like
in Andor. You're fucking Mon Mothmar's uncle.
It's nothing. Yeah. It's nothing like that.
Uncle Mothmar.
I'm Auntie Mothmar.
Oh yeah. If it was, yeah, I guess if it was UCB circa 2006, you'd have to be Auntie Mothmar. There'd be no, you'd get noted otherwise. Well, all right. This was wonderful.
Thank you for having
Wonderful.
Me.
Thank you. Will you upload your files?
Yes.
I have the Dropbox to do it.
We love you.
Amiris.
Bye.